Clint Lamb covers Alabama for Saturday Down South and does a tremendous job with it. And he normally joins us on Fridays, but we have a short show on Friday due to Alabama basketball. And, of course, they're getting things going for real coming up on Friday. So in the tournament, so they got Memphis, by the way. That would be pretty interesting. So he's joining us today instead. Clint, welcome back to the show. How are you, man?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing today, Tom?
I am great. I'm a little frustrated. I don't care about these interim polls, you know, even from the playoff committee. To me, it didn't feel like they were just kind of wasting time with this one. There's so much on the line this weekend. It just kind of seems like, you know, what's the point with all the, you know, TCU and Oklahoma and Miami and Notre Dame and even Alabama and Mississippi State and Auburn and Georgia. There's so much. We're going to know so much more after this weekend. You almost wonder, like, why did they even bother getting together, just kind of mail this one in?
Yeah, that's a great point. And, I mean, it's more so, I guess, for the media to kind of hash it out and talk about it. But anytime you bring it up to Nick Saban, you most certainly can tell that he's not the kind of guy to pay attention too much to this kind of stuff at this point in the season. A lot can happen between now and when this actually starts to matter.
Yeah, I say this with trying not to be a homer, and my listeners will just say, well, you're just being a homer. But I want to try and be as open-minded as possible. I sit there and I listen to these. I think Joey Galloway and David Pollack are idiots. All right, I'm just going to say that. I think Booger McFarland's great on that show that they do, but I think Galloway and Pollack are idiots, and Kurt Herbstreit does a good job. I think he's measured in what he says. But I'm sitting there last night, and I'm watching it before I just turn it off, and Galloway is rambling on about how he thinks that the gap between Alabama and Georgia widened last week. And he says, you know, I'm telling you, I believe after watching last week's game that I bet that the gap on the committee has widened between Georgia. And I'm thinking, so why would that be? Because Georgia beat an unranked Carolina team by 14 points, that was so much more impressive than Alabama beating the number 19 LSU team by 14 points and taking a knee on the 5-yard line. I don't understand. Why would the gap have grown? What have we seen that makes us think that, oh, why we had it? Not only did we get it right, but it's probably a growing gap between Alabama and Georgia, for example.
Yeah, that's something that I just can't get behind, and I'm certainly not going to be a homer about it either. To me, I'd rather be right than biased. And when I look at it in those two games, I went back and looked at least a majority of that Georgia and South Carolina game, and yeah, Georgia's an impressive team, but to me, I think that Alabama, at least in some areas, played a lot better than they have been within their last couple games, whether it be against Tennessee or other teams like that. But yeah, the offensive line definitely struggled to establish a run game. But, you know, this is an Alabama team that's dealt with a lot of injuries, but because they've been able to get a lot of rotation over the course of the first 9 weeks of the season, I do think that they're adequately prepared to handle those kind of losses. But when you look at Georgia compared to Alabama, especially with what happened last week, there's just absolutely no reason at this point to have Georgia's gap be widened at all. Now, granted, you have guys like Danny Canal who come on and say that they hate the word eye test, and yeah, that's why they feel like Alabama should be left out of the top four as of right now. Because they haven't played anybody. But then you look at Georgia, and Georgia has played Notre Dame. But I just think that if you're looking at those two games and you're saying that Georgia has widened the gap, that would simply be because of the eye test. And to me, that doesn't even make sense. I think Alabama looked every bit as impressive against LSU last week as Georgia did against South Carolina. And you look at the rivalry aspect of it, LSU is always going to bring their A game against Alabama. And so I was actually impressed with how they were able to handle themselves. But this week will be the big test.
Well, the game was never in jeopardy against LSU. I mean, it was never, you never had a feeling that, you know, LSU could win that football game. And certainly Alabama, if they were in a different point in their dynasty, if you will, you know, they could have pumped that one in at the end and made it 31-10. Now, would that have made you feel better, you know, if it was 31-10? And Saban just doesn't even care about that. But, you know, to schedules, the numbers don't lie. Alabama's strength of schedule now sits at 31, and Georgia's is 35. So they basically are the same strength of schedule. I mean, you know, that's, for all intents and purposes, the same strength of schedule. And I like Georgia a lot. I'm not throwing shade at Georgia here, But I think that in comparison, I think the thing that Georgia's got going for it is that it's not Alabama. That's the thing I think the biggest thing is it's something fresh that it's not Alabama. And that's why I think a lot of these pundits, they all start frothing at the mouth because they can talk about some team that isn't Alabama. And Alabama seems to be held to a little bit of a different standard.
I completely agree with you, and that's actually a really good point. The great part about it is there's still a lot of season left to be played. And Alabama having number 16 Mississippi State, number 10 Auburn, and then if they win both those, number one Georgia in the SEC championship, they have plenty of time to really establish their where they're at as far as a team to the committee. So it'll all work out in the end. But, yeah, I do agree. It is a little bit early to be talking about exactly where these teams in the top 10 should really be placed.
Yeah, and you're right, though. You know, this game that Alabama has coming up against Mississippi State, this is real. The thing about State that's so crazy is that they've had such a kind of bizarre season. I mean, after they throttled LSU, and at the time LSU was number 12, they beat LSU 37-7 at home, and you get the feeling that they'd still be beating them if they were still playing them. Everybody kind of jumped, Dan Mullen's going to be the first coach hired, and, you know, you got to get him out of there. And then they get worked over by Georgia and Auburn in back-to-back weeks, and it's like, well, I guess that was a mistake. But then very impressive win at Texas A&M and against Kentucky. I mean, you know, Kentucky's a decent football team. 45-7 is a thrashing there. Thrashed BYU, but everybody has. Did not look great against UMass, right? I mean, UMass hung around with them for a while. It was almost as if they were looking ahead a little bit to Alabama, or maybe because they had those goofy uniforms on, they weren't sure who they were. But this, you just don't know what you're getting with Mississippi State, huh?
Well, I do think that what it comes down to last week, and I've said this multiple times, is they absolutely were looking ahead to Alabama. To me, UMass, even though they ended up making it a game, going into that game, I don't think Dan Mullen or anybody else, whether they'll admit it or not, ever thought that game was in jeopardy. But I wouldn't be surprised if Mississippi State was spending a significant portion of their game plan or their game week last week preparing for Alabama as well. But I think they're a much different team at home outside of last week. And like I said, that there's definitely a justifiable reason as to why they might have struggled versus UMass. But you look at some of these other games, 45-7, 35-10, 37-7, 49-0, just Mississippi State in front of that home crowd really just seems like it has kind of a different identity. And I think that that's probably going to be one of the biggest challenges that Alabama has. I know Kirby Smart earlier said outside of noise, home field advantage doesn't make any sort of difference in the game. And to a certain degree, that's true. But that noise and that energy that you feel, whether it be, you know, things are going bad and then something finally goes good and you start gaining momentum, it's just easier to have momentum shifts when you're the home team. So I definitely think that's something that's going to play into Mississippi State's favor. And with a guy like Nick Fitzgerald, he didn't have much success versus Alabama last year, but I do think he's grown in some areas, and I do think that it ends up being a much different game this year compared to last year.
And a lot of the focus is on Nick Fitzgerald, but this is a sneaky good defense that Mississippi State has. I mean, this is a team that's seventh in the country in total defense. Alabama's two, but they're only about 40 yards or so behind Alabama there in scoring defense, number 14 in the country, only allowing 18 points a game. So they kind of, and they run the ball well, 259 yards a game, 11th in the country, and again, just behind Alabama there. So when you look at them, they run the ball well, and they play good defense. They're trying, you know, they're being built in that same mold that Alabama, Georgia, and now Auburn are, with the way Auburn plays defense. So that they're kind of in that same mix, if you will, as the rest of the teams that are at the top of the conference.
I agree. And really where I think Mississippi State has improved the most and what's made the biggest difference for them is their ability in the trenches on both sides of the football. Their offensive line has been outstanding when it comes to protecting the quarterback. They've only given up 5 sacks all year, which is by far ranked first in the SEC. And then, of course, you got guys like Jeffrey Simmons and Montez Sweat on the defensive line who are able to generate some pressure, get after the quarterback, and excellent stopping the run. I'm very curious to see how a guy like Bradley Bozeman and Rosh Piersbacher and some of those interior offensive linemen for Alabama handle a guy like Jeffrey Simmons. He's definitely a monster on the field. I know a lot of people don't really care for him off the field because of what he did last year. But he's definitely a guy that can make a significant impact in this game. And I would be very curious to see if Alabama or how Alabama attacks him because he is that kind of interior presence that's really really effective and really tough to scheme against, I guess you would say. But as far as Nick Fitzgerald and the offense, I mean, it's just – it's amazing how much they rely on a guy like Nick Fitzgerald. When you look at it, he's accounted for 75.8% of their offensive touchdowns. And, you know, for comparison's sake, you look at a guy like Jalen Hurts, he's only accounted for 37.8% of Alabama's. So that's, you know, over double for Nick Fitzgerald. And so it's a matter of stopping him. I think it all comes down to if they can keep him in check like they did last season, I think that Alabama can kind of run away with this one despite maybe having some struggles to move the ball offensively. But I think the key to the game is Nick Fitzgerald and Alabama's defense's ability to stop him with the losses. I think that's another thing you got to look at, too, is – with the losses of a guy like Deion Hamilton, Mack Wilson, those are communicators, especially Hamilton. He's the field general of the defense, and so getting guys in position and things like that could significantly impact a guy that can make plays in a lot of different ways, like a Nick Fitzgerald. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we can't just totally ignore what happened last year. It was 51-3, and again, they are a different team. When they are there in front of the cowbells, and I think it'll be important for Alabama to do something on either side of the ball significant early to try and get that crowd and get that mindset of the Mississippi State team, you know, the feeling like, oh, this is here we go again like last year. Fitzgerald last year, I think 145 yards passing and 15 yards rushing. He was neutralized. And remember, that was Jalen Hurts' best game ever as a collegian, right? He had like 350 yards passing and another 100 yards rushing and five touchdowns. And, you know, that was one of those kind of crazy games there. So you would think that even though the jersey colors change and the location changes, that they're still in that mindset, that there's all of that confidence that Alabama got with what they were able to do last year against this team.
I agree. And like I said, the fact that Alabama's been able to get some guys to step up and replace some of those guys like Jonathan Allen, Tim Williams, Ryan Anderson within their front seven, their growth this season could end up playing a major impact in this game and keeping a guy like Nick Fitzgerald contained for the second year in a row. But as far as Jalen Hurts, I do want to say I was extremely impressed with him last week. I wrote an article about it. The statistics didn't really show it, but I'm seeing improvement, whether it be on his accuracy deep, whether it be him keeping his eyes up when he's facing pressure. He did an excellent job of moving within the pocket, but maintaining his eyes downfield and looking for receivers. And of course, when he was forced to break outside the pocket, it was a great game of making decisions. There was only one throw. It was one of his last ones that I didn't think was a very good throw or decision, I guess you would say. But overall, I thought it was probably one of, if not his best performances of the season. And hopefully he can carry that momentum into this game as well.
I agree with you on Sean Deion Hamilton. You lose a quarterback of the defense there. You're losing a really smart guy there, a senior there. And, you know, I think that is a big loss. I think Mack Wilson is very, very athletic and makes plays. But, so does Dylan Moses. I mean, I think it's his time now to do this. And I think he's going to be an absolute stud. You're going to be surprised, I think, a little bit there. And they're basically the same position. I mean, it's the Mike linebacker. It's not they like lost half of their linebacking core. They're still starting Anthony Jennings and Rashawn Evans, and you know those guys are still in the mix there. But it's Jamie Mosley is going to start at the Sam. It's Keith Holcomb now. It's you know the spotlight shines on him. He's a big block of a guy, 6'4", 236 pounds. It's not like he's never been on the field. We've seen him on the field before. I don't think it's devastating to the defense. Minka Fitzpatrick, that would be devastating, and he won't be 100%. So if they can kind of limit his snaps possible and then keep him out maybe against Mercer, have him ready to go full goal by the time you get to Iron Bowl, you know, that'd be great. To me, a ding that Minka Fitzpatrick is more of a concern than Keith Holcomb stepping in at Mike linebacker.
That's very true. To me, Minka Fitzpatrick is the best player in the country. When you look at what he's able to give Alabama's defense, and both on and off the field, just he is everything that Nick Saban wants in a football player, both on and off, the way he works. And, you know, I know that he's really trying to play through this injury, and I hope it's not too significant. And I most certainly hope that it doesn't get any worse. I'm sure that if he was at a significant risk of it getting hurt even more, that they would probably hold him out. But you're absolutely right with how important he is to the defense. But I do think it's pretty crazy that when you look at the fact that Alabama lost the top two players at the Mike linebacker position, they still got a 4-star and a 5-star on the two deep there. It just only speaks to the depth that Alabama's been able to build there. And there, if one thing's certain, it's the fact that that depth, if they didn't have that depth, they would be in a lot of trouble in the same way that Tennessee was last year when all those injuries started racking up for them. So the 7 consecutive number one recruiting classes are definitely coming into play this season.
I think Holcomb and Moses would start at probably 8 of the schools in the league. I mean, you know, if they were, if Sean Deion Hamilton were there and Mac Wilson were still there, I think that if Keith Holcomb and Dylan Moses were on 8 of the other teams in this league, that those guys would be starters. You know, it's not like they're putting, you know, some walk on in there and see what they can do. You know, I mean, those are pretty solid football players.
They are, and Holcomb especially. I was very surprised.
I like him a lot.
I knew he was a guy that could end up making an impact on special teams, but really watching him, especially last week, he played really well when he got in there. And I went back and really dove into some of his earlier film from this season, and he definitely is a guy that can fill in very well. I know he's kind of gotten lost as far as his name among the 5-star guys, Ben Davis, Mac Wilson, of course, Dylan Moses, but he's definitely been a solid contributor, and I definitely think that Alabama fans are going to know his name before the end of the season.
All right, man, appreciate you. Tremendous stuff. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll look forward to hooking up again next week.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you having me on.
All right, thank you. Clint Lamb, Saturday Down South. All right, we'll come back. We'll get an update with T-Mac as well. We'll do that next right here on 730-1039. Yep.